Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
I'm now doing a podcast with the boom microphone, the shotgun microphone in the car. I've had sort of a lapel microphone, and then, shock to horror, I've played it back and there's all this deep, throaty vibration. So I'm going to check with that. Happens again. So when you replay something on your dictaphone to check it's okay, you just, it's sort of like this real crappy tranny radio, so you don't hear the big boom. And yeah, just to hope them. And of course there's the 30 meters it would be, well, so over 10 meters of cable on this boom, not telescope microphone, broadcast microphone. It's the idea is that you can place it there, and that cable can be used to lash it to the cup holder. So let's see how this goes as a podcast. And I just had to actually think of something to podcast about, and what I will do is the idea of rain and thunder, because it's just beginning to rain here in Australia, because when it rains, everything goes absolutely chock-a-block from steely sort of brown, death brown, sort of, so it's the end of the world, then it's absolutely green, and then the grass is high, and then people start complaining about the high grass, and I don't know what it's all about. I'm just driving past a pool at the moment, and I'm just thinking there's heaps of people in the pool, some sort of exhibition. There's a pool up the top of the hill up here in Glenbrook, but a local rise of Glenbrook, this local rise here, they've got a pool and something, which sort of makes sense, sort of halfway down you have things running into it, so that you don't get run off into a pool if you put a pool on top of the hill. But what I was going to say is about the idea of clouds and precipitation. And the critical thing that people really don't know is that water, H2O, is lighter than air. Air is made out of nitrogen, which is got N2, a triple bond nitrogen, and that's nitrogen's basically an inert gas. Nitrogen itself is not, doesn't take on an extra electron, and so nitrogen. Two nitrogens is sort of a way of actually making it into, basically nitrogen is an inert gas, and it's only through absolute craftiness that bacteria can actually fix nitrogen, and that fix nitrogen means breaking into two. But the story is that nitrogen N2 has got a molecular weight of 28, and oxygen has got a molecular weight of 32, that's 16 nucleons, that's 9 protons, sorry, 8 protons and 8 neutrons coming together to make oxygen, 16 2 oxygens together. Oxygen, of course, is a highly reactive volatile gas, and because it loves electrons so much, it wants to react and grab electrons, whereas nitrogens are pretty much like that. And it makes, I'm just going over, H2O, and H2O is two hydrogens and an oxygen. It's got a molecular weight of 16 plus 2, which is 18. 18 versus, on average, of around 29, because it's four parts nitrogen, one part oxygen and a squillionth something else. So water, when it turns to vapor, is a buoyant gas. It is basically hydrogen. If you consider an oxygen versus an oxygen is the dead weight of O2, and in so oxygen is oxygen plus oxygen. Water is oxygen plus H2. And so you're comparing the weight of an oxygen plus a H2 if you subtract it out. And of course, H2O, water, is much lighter. And that means that once you convert it into a gas, it floats to the top. So you know that in your bathroom, the water vapor goes to the top of the ceiling. So if you have hot, what is it? You have a shower. You tend to think, oh well, it's hotter air. But even so, even if it wasn't hotter air, the hot condensation would be on the ceiling and not on the floor. So that's one great thing. You don't necessarily slip. And this condensation goes up and it floats up way into the upper atmosphere, a couple of kilometres up, where the temperature begins to drop. The temperature begins to drop for just a number of reasons. One is the heat is coming from the Earth, but also space is very cold. Now, normally this keeps on going. It would go colder and colder and goes condense, and once it condenses, it goes higher and higher. But what happens is that the atmosphere begins to heat up again a second time due to the ozone layer. So the ozone layer creates the top of the clouds. The bottom of the clouds are created by the vapor here. Now, I'm just going to have to concentrate in here a little bit, my friends, as I look for and I discover a park. And I'm just going to watch what this person does, because this person's going around here. It's a real competitive thing. I've just seen a park up here. I'm just going to go and grab this particular park. This old man thing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop this and have a good old listen to see whether this is a better podcast. And after I've had my blood test and bought a few things, I'll conclude this podcast on the way home. Hopefully it will be a higher grade podcast. Slowly getting there. Thanks a lot for listening. Okay, podcasting again. This time I've got a low-pass filter. Now, a high-pass, whatever it is, it's a high-pass filter, a low-cut-off filter. So hopefully this will solve the problem of the deep-throaty car coming in. I'll listen to it afterwards. And what I was doing is giving you a general idea of why do clouds appear to float? Well, they don't float. Water floats, and then it floats until it turns into clouds. And an important thing is that if you have a hot surface and you pour water on it, it turns into steam. That looks as though it's suddenly hot air rushing up. It's not like hot air. It's suddenly conversion. It's a sudden release of lighter than air gas. And this means it travels upwards sort of a buoyant momentum continues to go up. Now, if it continues to go up and punch into very cold regions, even though the stratosphere is heating up, it'll keep on punching up, cooling down. So what happens is that when it, you see a sudden expansion, sort of a push. So for your cloud being pushed, the cloud, when the water hits the hot ground, the water vaporizes, goes up. It sort of push up, and then the cloud condensation actually condenses, and so that actually contracts and sucks the air up. Now, this particular process can go into overdrive in a thunderstorm, and what happens is that the actual air goes sufficiently high up that it creates an upward wind. So at a certain point, the rain falls through the wind, and the major thing of cloud systems is that they're an updraft. Now, people understand this, and for gliders, you know, when you're parachuting, you tend to actually go underneath a cloud, because a cloud is basically the little exhaust of a water engine. So when you've got rolls here, I'm just going to actually pay a little bit of attention in this intersection. Not too much attention, or enough attention not to have a smash. There you go. I was, whoa. I find it a little bit stressing. Okay, I'm just drive past here. So it's raining at the moment. Now this occurs in a dramatic system for thunderclouds, and what happens is that thunderclouds often go in the reverse direction to wind. That is, it is an unstable resetting of a system. So the system goes in, blows in one direction, triggers the thunder front, and the thunder front actually goes upwind. So what happens is that it begins to rain, create an updraft, and then that pushes the moist air which has come in, moist hot air, the moist air over a hot surface in, and that manages to go in without triggering a thunderstorm. Then the thunderstorm is triggered and it will actually work its way back against the front. So the enormous, the interesting thing is that often you have thunderstorms coming in the reverse direction to the oncoming wind, and there's particularly dramatic footage of thunderstorms. Everything's much bigger in the United States. What the heck are you doing? Thanks, mate. So I was just waved across an intersection, and it's not as bad as the, well, essentially they have eliminated all the confusing intersections. Intersections which I have said is confusing, it is unclear what's going on. They have spent millions, I'd say easily up to $100 million worth on these particular intersections. They've come in, spent $10 million here, $30 million here, and it's re-engineered the intersection so there is no confusion. Now, it is really interesting in that, this is just a side to point, is that people will insist that their reality is not confusing, the roll routes are there, no one would make an intersection, which is no good. And that's probably the last intersection there is a little bit complex to get through to. Well, it's very clear who's got right of way and things like that. There was an intersection further up where it wasn't clear. Now, this is, I suppose, an interesting thing here, getting back into clouds, rain, moisture, water. People start off with their basic facts, and they're pretty well convinced that it's not confusing or it's not counterintuitive. A cloud in the sky, well, that's bloody, that's, you know, that's a bucket of water that's going, thank goodness for it. It's up there, but that is counterintuitive, isn't it? It's something, and people expect it there to be no complex scientific explanation for it. People expect all the intersections to be sorted out, all pieces of knowledge to be sorted out. And so I'm coming back home, and of course the real purpose of this podcast is to check whether I have mastered the podcast in the car problem to go ahead, and then I'll have to actually get up a method of holding the boom microphone, a much more solid method, much more sensible clipping method. I just have to think about how that can be done without irritating my fellow passengers who come in here saying, what the heck is that? What are you doing? Okay, thanks a lot for listening. That's pretty cool podcasting. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.